So tonight, we're continuing on with our little series here. I want to talk about the last three factors of the Eightfold Path. Right effort, right concentration, right mindfulness. The Eightfold Path is traditionally divided up into three groupings. The first two, right thought, right understanding, are thought of as wisdom, a wise understanding of the world. The middle three, speech, right action, and right livelihood are usually grouped as sila, or the practice of the precepts, perceptual practice. And the last three, the three that we're going to talk about tonight, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, are classified under meditation. And there's a whole discussion in our book, Basic Buddhist Concepts, Kogen Mizuno, about the classic understanding of the Eightfold Path and these three steps in particular. And my emphasis, my hope, is to talk more about how we apply those things, how we understand those things in terms of Zazen practice, in terms of the meditation practice that we do. And that's been my emphasis throughout this series of talks. Classically, right effort is described as being of four types. They are the effort to prevent evil from arising, the effort to abandon evil when it has arisen, the effort to produce good, and the effort to increase good when it has been produced. So that's kind of goes right back to the Buddha. And again, we want to understand that evil in Buddhism is not any kind of embodied energy that exists in any kind of real way. Evil is effort, action that produces suffering. And in that sense, it has a more confined and limited meaning. There isn't any sort of great conflict of good and evil. And this is one of the fundamental differences between a Western understanding of reality and a Buddhist or Eastern understanding of reality. In terms of one of the things we've been talking about in this section of our series about right, the word right, what that means in terms of the Noble Eightfold Path, right, you know, kind of from my perspective, a good working definition of what right means is whatever is what works, what actually works to support our practice, what actually works to facilitate our walking the path and finding the cessation of suffering. So it's not, again, one of the things that we're trying to cultivate in Zen practices, the letting go of discrimination, the letting go of the discriminatory mind, the judgmental mind, and the mind which pits one thing against another. And so in that sense, it's not right versus wrong or good versus evil. It's right in the sense of, oh, this is most effective, this is most skillful, this actually works. And that, again, shows up in what we're talking about in terms of right efforts and in terms of meditation practice. Even though we say that part of the effort of meditation is to discard the discriminatory mind, the mind which pits one thing against another, we're also doing that in a context that, in a sense, has a purpose and intention and a direction. So we're not saying, there's a to bring the guy up, but we're not saying, and again, I want to underline what we're not saying. There is a famous person, maybe infamous is a better word, British man named Aleister Crowley, who had this line that he said, "That do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." And there's a way in which people from in the West can understand Zen practice as, and particularly the aspect of wisdom and meditation, as being able to do whatever you want to, finding a state of mind in which we can do whatever we want to. And this is associated with non-discrimination. Non-discrimination in this view of things, which is mistaken, means anything goes. And that is not what we're talking about, because we're talking about it within the context of how to find liberation from suffering. That's what the Buddha's intention is. He says, suffering exists, how can we find liberation from suffering? And ultimately, the liberation from suffering that the Buddha is talking about is in a sense transcendence of the world. So in one sense, well, it has this narrow scope that we're looking at it at. It also has much bigger implications in terms of what we discover. So that one of the things that doesn't work is having a view of discriminate or non-discrimination that allows for anything goes. Because that is a delusive notion, and it will, while it may temporarily provide you with some satisfaction or excitement or something of interest, ultimately the consequence of following such a philosophy or an idea will be much deeper suffering. So in terms of right effort, right understanding, right meditation, we are looking at understanding, clarifying what is discrimination, what is the discriminatory mind. And that is, in terms of meditation, where we're discovering what discarding evil is and keeping evil from arising is. In terms of our meditation practice, what we're doing is teaching ourselves to be sensitive to the arising of things in our mind which will lead us to suffering, lead us into suffering. That's what we're talking about in terms of keeping evil from arising and eliminating evil from our minds when we notice that it has arisen. And in terms of doing positive or doing good, what we're trying to do is cultivate the qualities of mind which promote non-suffering. In terms of, and in one sense, what I'm going to do here is, now that I've started with a little bit of description of right effort, what I'm going to be talking about is all three of these things together. Right effort, right concentration, right mindfulness. Because in our meditation practice, Zazen has this peculiar, well, it's a different way of kind of approaching meditation than maybe you might encounter in other traditional approaches, because it's very holistic. It doesn't give you a nice kind of linear path to follow. It doesn't give you a set of exercises to follow in terms of strengthening your mental abilities. It just says, sit still, just sit, let go. Let go of whatever's arising in your mind. And in that place, there's a sort of holistic encapsulation of the meditation of the Buddha. So as I talk here, I'm going to be weaving all three of those qualities into my description of meditation practice, I hope. So the effort of meditation then, the basic effort of meditation is to get ourselves to the cushion. Okay, that is a kind of necessary effort that should not be neglected. And in one sense, that physical effort requires a kind of grasping the will end and a fair bit of energy. I was reading something by Theravada Master earlier today, and he was saying, Buddhism is not for the lazy. being somewhat physically challenged, that always kind of gets my little inadequacy koan up, because I don't really have a lot of energy. But on the other hand, I do have the energy to do meditation practice, and will get myself there to the meditation cushion. So meditation requires us to do something. It requires an act, and that act asks for some energy. And oftentimes the energy that we need to put into meditation is more than we might think, but it's also slightly different than we might think. Sometimes the effort of meditation is to sit still and be willing to let go of our willful conflict, our willful fight. And it actually takes less energy than we think, although it takes a little bit of energy to get over that hump. So the effort of meditation, right effort of meditation, we talk about having, about sitting up straight, about having a bright mind, about allowing ourselves to breathe normally. These are all aspects of the right effort of meditation. River Master Jiu describes meditation as, in one of her books, as being having a bright flowing mind. And in one sense, what we're doing is both cultivating positivity, looking up, looking on the bright side of things, but also letting go of our habitual tendency to look down, to be downward looking in terms of our mental cast, and to see the brightness that is already there. So the letting go process, time and time again, I find myself kind of absorbed in some kind of mental aberration and thinking, oh, gotta let that go. And just sitting there and realizing, oh, I'm happy, just as happy without that thing. I'm actually happy without that thing. There is a brightness that lives there, that is in our minds. And so people like me are always kind of banging on about letting go, letting go, letting go. And you can kind of think, well, you know, what is there if I let go? And that's the thing, that's the mystery, I'm kind of saying, go there and find out for yourself. Because that thing which we find when we let go does have these qualities about them, bright, flowing. And again, we it's as if we are, I was thinking about this earlier today, it's as if we've inherited a house and it's covered up. It's typical of a neglected house in South Carolina. It's covered completely with vines, and it's filled with the detritus of many lifetimes, and it's a mess, the house that we've inherited. And our job is to uncover it and find the quality of the house underneath it. And this is, in a sense, what we're doing in our meditation practice. And it actually requires some effort to get those vines off the house and to clean up the inside of the house. And once we do and open up all the windows and doors, light comes in and fresh air comes in, and we find that it's actually kind of a nice place to be. And so in that sense, we have to make that effort, be willing to identify what needs to go, what needs to stay, and do the work to remove them. And then we have the house to live in. So that is in a sense the focus of our effort. Mindfulness in meditation, in this meditation practice, Master Jiu actually uses the word awareness when she's talking about mindfulness. And in some sense, I find that to be a less constricting term. Just being aware of what we're doing, being aware of where we are, what our mind is doing, what our body is doing. And allowing that awareness to just be there and not be anything particularly special, but just to allow it to be there. That, in a sense, is, to me, right mindfulness. Sometimes we have the habit of getting distracted by our minds, and we need to, again, apply some will to training our minds to be aware of what's going on in the present moment. And in that effort, it requires energy. And in that effort, we also can use the more traditional kind of understanding of mindfulness. Okay, one of the ways you can cultivate this, for instance, is to have something during the day that triggers our reminder to be mindful. Somebody suggested that they were living at Shasta Abbey, where you're going up and down a lot of stairs a lot of times, into and out of buildings. So they said, okay, well, every time I go up a set of stairs, I'll remember to be mindful. And then just be mindful of climbing the stairs. And that helps to bring your mind back to being mindful. Every time you kind of walk through a doorway, you can kind of train yourself to remember to be mindful. These kinds of efforts, in that way, break through the habit of distraction. Part of the energy of practice is to just break through old habits and to bring ourselves back to the present moment. You can find skillful ways in that way to, again, apply these more traditional mindfulness practice to cultivating this other kind of awareness of what's going on. And in that process, then you can also begin to see what your mind is doing. I don't want to be mindful, you know, whatever that mind says. I want to be distracted. I want to be thinking about X, Y, or Z. You know, I don't want to be back here. Oh, that's interesting. Why is that? Look at that. Be more careful about that. So, one of the things about practice is, in one sense, learning how to not be in conflict with yourself, and learning, and the right quality of practice is learning a way that you can be steady and persistent about practice without getting into a fight with yourself about it. We and there's this kind of idea we have about making the grand gesture. You know, I'm going to sit for, I think Reverend Althea was telling a story about this. I'm going to sit all night long and all day long, you know, for 40 hours until I have some, you know, penetrating insight. Don't remember the details of your story, my apologies. But, and in a way, this is like, and we all do this, this is like making the grand gesture. But in terms of practice, Reverend Master Daisui used to say, patient endeavor is the best means of training. Just our persistent, steady effort, that's really the jewel. That's really the gem of practice. That's really the thing that will see all kinds of barriers taken down and all kinds of profound experiences come to light. Just that willingness to steadily practice day in and day out. 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. Increase it to 6 minutes in the morning. Increase it to 6 minutes at night. Do what you can that works in your life. Be persistent. Your mind doesn't want to be mindful. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, be distracted. But the next time I go up these steps, I'm going to think, oh, let's see about being mindful. And persistently over time, you overcome that part of your mind without getting into a fight with it that doesn't want to be mindful, that resists being still and present in the present moment. In a way, you kind of have to outsmart yourself. And that just steady effort is really, it doesn't seem like much, but it really undermines those kind of deeply held habits and that resistance to being, you know, in a fog somewhere, or being present, that would rather you be in a fog somewhere. Steady effort. Right concentration is really, we think about concentration as being concentrated on a single thing, on a particular item. And in a way, sometimes that's necessary. Like I'm saying, in our mindfulness practice, sometimes you have to be kind of careful and recognize, okay, I get distracted here, so I'm going to be, I get distracted when I'm driving my car, so I'm going to just pay attention to driving my car. Okay. What was it I used to think? I used to have this thing happen. For some reason, I found it very difficult to drive my car and talk to someone who was sitting next to me in the passenger seat. And I would find myself often turning the wrong direction on one-way streets when this was happening. This is bad. And so I had to recognize that there was that habit and then make an effort to be more mindful and present during those situations. I didn't like make a rule in my car that nobody could talk to me when I was likely to be turning the wrong direction on one-way streets. I instead turned it within and said, okay, I'm gonna be more careful, more still, and see what it is about this that is distracting me. And over time, it's been some time since I've done that, so I guess I've worked on that and improved it. Have I done that recently?
No.
Okay. I'm sure I have other things that are equally problematic, but there you go. I'm working on stuff. So, concentration, we might think concentrating on one thing is the ticket. But the concentration that we're talking about in terms of Zazen is letting go of the focus on one particular thing. Just sitting, allowing things to arise and pass away, and coming back to a general stillness and awareness of what's going on. Not particularly focused on any particular thing. And in that regard, that is right concentration in terms of meditation practice. sometimes it's necessary to concentrate on one particular thing, and then that's what we're doing. That's what we do. That's our practice. But in terms of meditation practice, the concentration of meditation and is to sit still with this bright mind and this awareness and to let go of whatever arises. And that in itself has its own kind of concentration. Over time, we begin to be aware of subtle ways in which we are sort of not being still in body and mind, are distracting ourselves in our minds. And in that sense, it is useful to put more energy into sitting still, put a little bit more energy into concentration, put a little bit more energy into awareness. But it is, there's a subtle interplay of this action and this effort. For the most part, our effort is to just sit still and allow things to arise and pass away. I remember having a discussion with Rev. Master Hario at one point, and he was talking about doing what comes naturally. And we, in a way, there's a great kind of liberation and joy in practice when we begin to just be able to just go through our daily life and just do the ordinary things of daily life and just do what the next thing is. In a way, to just do what comes up naturally. And this isn't the same as what I'm talking about before, where anything goes. This is just carefully going through your day and dealing with what needs to be done. But he was saying, you have to be careful of that, because sometimes our habitual patterns, even though informed by practice, can cover up something we might be missing. And so it's useful to be just a little suspicious of doing what comes naturally and really be willing to be completely honest and see clearly what is going on. In one sense, the right effort of meditation is the effort to see clearly what is true, to ask yourself in a kind of completely honest, in a kind of brutally honest way, what is really true here? What's really going on? Because the mind is so good at kind of blurring situations and covering things up that we just have to be a little careful of it. And I'm not trying to encourage people to be paranoid about themselves. But just to, I kind of think of it as having self-irony, kind of like thinking, okay, what are you really getting up to there, Reverend Leon? You know, with a little bit of good humor about it. Recognizing that there's just this quality of my mind in practice where I just have to keep moving forward and looking at the more subtle ways in which I distort things. So there's a great quote which I've said in the past and which I'll probably repeat in the future. I told this to somebody once and he said, oh yeah, that's just the kind of thing that monks say. Oh, that's interesting. Dogen says, the determination to see things as they truly are, free from preconceived notions, results in the emergence of true practice. And in a way, that encapsulates to me what my kind of primary effort is, my primary intention is, to both let go of my preconceptions and to see clearly what is really going on. And to trust that that is really at the basis of the establishment of real practice, of a real kind of spiritual life. So far it's worked pretty good for me, and I kind of believe Dogen, so I can pass it on as pretty good advice. Okay, well, I think that's pretty much what I had to say. Any thoughts or questions? Okay.
One thing that's coming up, I don't know if it's a particular question necessarily, but something I was thinking about when you're talking about not being distracted. One of the things that I kind of have to do as a writer is sort of constantly be thinking about what I'm going to write before I write it, and I'm just wondering about like the compatibility there, and like I sense that there is one, and that the less I'm thinking about something maybe constantly and more sort of being concentrated bursts, that could be, I don't know, a better way to do what I'm doing in a more sort of practice-informed way to do what I'm doing. But I guess I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Two things. When I'm, I find myself doing a lot of the cooking in various temples where I live. But I also am often constrained because I end up fixing a lot of the stuff in the temples where I live. So I'm working on, you know, fixing the solar hot water system. But then I have to stop that and come in and make lunch. And I find I've been cooking for a long time, and so that's pretty much ingrained in this. This really does relate to what you're saying. I'm pretty sure you'll see by the time I get done, even though it's not exactly my writing. I've been cooking for a long time. It's pretty much ingrained in my, I don't know, I've been cooking since I was a kid. Like, some of my earliest memories are helping my mother in the kitchen, so like since I'm like 4 years old or something like that. And what I notice is that while I'm working on, say, the plumbing project, I'm really there and doing the project, but my mind is working on a whole bunch of different stuff. There's all kinds of stuff going on in my mind. And at some point, it's not an uncommon thing for me to, at some point in the process of working on the plumbing project, to stop for a kind of millisecond and focus a little bit on lunch and realize, oh, lunch has just come together, a menu for lunch has just come together, and what I can do. And it's not exactly that I'm distracted by lunch, but just the mind has a great capacity to have a whole bunch of stuff going on which I'm not aware of. Okay. My calculus teacher used to say, if you can't figure out the math problem, if the answer to your math problem doesn't come right away, put it down, go off and do the dishes. And 9 times out of 10, some insight will arise in which you read the math problem, study it, don't get it, go off and do the dishes, 9 times out of 10, something will arise. And in that sense, I'm not trying to get away from either the problem of what to make for lunch or concentrate on to the exclusion of anything. And this is why awareness and the concentration of not being concentrating on some particular thing are important, because it allows your mind to just do what it does. I used to have a colleague in Portland who was an office worker, and she was somebody's administrative assistant in some large corporation. She was constantly doing stuff with her mind, writing letters and doing, you know, all kinds of stuff that you might think, oh, you can't really meditate doing that. But evidence suggested that she actually could meditate doing that. So what I'm trying to say is the effort to be still in whatever we're doing is not the same as the effort to keep whatever we're doing out of our minds. It's just to be still. So when it's time to do your dishes, just be still and do your dishes. Sometimes when you're doing your dishes, stuff's going to be coming up about what to write. And you get to the point where you can see, oh, I'm just distracting myself with that. I really need to make the effort to be still and do the dishes. When you're writing, just be still and just write. And allow yourself to just do whatever that process is. And allow your mind to, in a way, find its own way to doing that process. And the effort is just to be still in it. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. So in other words, when we talk about liberation, we actually are liberating ourselves. We're not putting more constraint on ourselves, although there's a little bit of that in terms of discipline and effort. It's more, how can I be liberated from my habits of pushing away and holding on? And our mind is completely free in that respect. That makes some sense?
Yeah. Okay.
Did you?
I was just thinking, you know, just be careful about spending too much time sort of questioning yourself, mistrusting yourself. You know, am I doing the right or wrong thing here? Allow yourself to follow what feels like it needs to be done, and then just do what's right in front of you. Which is what Reverend Leon is saying, is just slightly different way of saying it. Don't mistrust yourself. Don't second guess yourself all the time, because that's just another distraction. Just do the best that you can, and don't worry too much about it. And when you find yourself indulging in distracting yourself with a story that maybe you're not actually writing, maybe you're not working on, or whatever, it's just it's a distraction. Fine, let it go. And when you're actually meditating, or when you're washing the dishes, and you're really kind of standing there with the dishes in your hand, you know, following a story, well, either put the dishes aside and go write the story, or bring yourself back to the dishes. But don't worry too much about it. Really, very straightforward, very simple. Keeps you from breaking dishes, and it keeps you from forgetting the story. And sometimes, even in meditation, something can come up very strongly that's good to follow at that time. Doesn't happen very often, but it might be better to get up and go do something about it. Or at the very least, it might be good to make a note. But be careful about getting in a habit of making notes about everything, because then you're just going to distract yourself.
One of the things I think that's really useful to have in mind, Dogen says, you know, the means of training are thousandfold, and pure meditation must be done. One of the things I try to do for myself is when I'm sitting, when I'm actually doing formal meditation, and I really have tried to make that a cornerstone of my daily life, daily practice. When I'm sitting, I try to just sit and to really put a lot of energy into just sitting there and letting go of what's going on in my mind. Just really do that wholeheartedly. And like Reverend Master's saying, sometimes stuff happens, and I have stuff spinning around in my head during that time, but I just really try to make it a point. And then after having made that real effort, then throughout the day, my training is more fluid in terms of being of the effort I'm making in my mind to be still. So I'm a little bit more relaxed about that period of time. That makes some sense. So I just really try to put as much energy into just letting everything come and go when I'm sitting, and then during the day, then trying to be a little more fluid and really respond to what needs to be done. And sometimes I can find that to be helpful too. Did you have something?
So you're talking about what comes naturally to you. I'm guessing you were saying more in the context of be careful that it's not an impulse that's happening. It's not something like an impulsive behavior that's happening, that and just trying to be aware of, like, to be sure of that. So,
Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, what comes naturally is to, you know, for myself, I can easily find myself up at 4 a.m, you know, watching bad movies on TV. Or whatever, and if I follow that too much, I don't get my work done during the day, and I'm, you know, kind of lousy to work with and I'll live with and all that stuff. So I just have to be careful about those kinds of habits. And I'm not saying, you know, sometimes when I'm taking rest, I'll actually stay up until 4 a.m. and watch bad movies on TV. You know, I'm not saying that there's anything inherently wrong with that, but I have to be really honest with myself and say, this is not the kind of life that I want to look back on and say, this is the life that I lived, you know. And that's what I'm talking about. It's not even so much as impulse, it's more like I noticed that the other day I was doing something with my smartphone, and I realized, oh, I just spent an hour doing nothing with my smartphone, you know, and it came naturally. It wasn't an hour I was supposed to be doing something else with, but I could have probably done something more productive with that time, or something, I would have felt better with it. I think, oh, I have to be really careful about that, because it can just kind of, particularly with today's modern media, it can just kind of suck you along, and you think, oh, I was just doing what came naturally, but is that really what you wanted to spend your time with? So that's what I'm kind of talking about. Okay. Good. Well, thank you very much.